nonprofits, let's raise more money. For this episode, Jason and Trevor join with special guest John Sommervold, the executive director of Tallgrass Recovery. John discusses some of his own struggles with addiction, as well as his journey into the nonprofit world and how he approaches management within his organization. Let's get right into it.
John Sommervold, so happy to have you on. An attendee that we met in person in Texas for our first ever boot camp, and it was a joy to meet you and Amanda, and thanks so much for coming on, man.
Well, thanks very much. It was a privilege to be there and a privilege to be
thank you
a part of a seminar that was, it seemed actually designed to help us instead of just sell things. I kept commenting on the way that it exceeded expectations as we went through, and finally Amanda reminded me just to change my expectations, which...
You know, you could raise your expectations, sir.
Yeah, I'm still awesome about that.
thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Yeah, we appreciate that.
Well, so I've been sober 25 years, and Tallgrass Recovery is a immersive 12-step recovery experience. It's a 30-day stay in what essentially is a large home. And it's 14 beds,
yep.
8 male beds, 6 female beds. About 80% of our services are provided by volunteers who are in the recovery community. So everything we're showing people, mm-hmm. every solution that we offer is a solution that each of us is doing. Everything we talk about is something we did, you know, we either did at that stage in our recovery or we're still doing every day. You know, so I've been sober 25 years. I met with my sponsor yesterday and he said, "How are things?" And he's very busy shaping my appreciation for my spouse, mm-hmm. which I think every man in the world needs. And I apparently need it pretty straight on. And so I was complaining to him that I'd been interrupted while working out. I work out every morning in the basement and she kept coming down and talking to me.
Okay.
And that was taking longer. And then I missed mass because I wasn't done working out yet. And he's like, "And do you listen for God at all ever any day of your life?" And I said, "What are you talking about? God and I talk all the time." He said, "No, God was telling you to go to mass with your wife and she was interrupting you so that you could do that, not so that you could be upset and think about yourself." So I still have those opportunities 25 years in. And Tiny, beautiful, my sponsor, is exactly right. I wasn't listening.
Yeah,
I wasn't listening. I was just reacting. What a terrible idea.
Yep.
So at Tallgrass, we have ongoing skill set and tools that we're trying to teach people, which mostly revolve around the fact that fear, guilt, and shame got them to where they are. And it's a process of offloading that fear, guilt, and shame so that you can feel real connections with people. Because when you're ashamed of yourself, you don't feel a connection. When you're ashamed of yourself, you're always talking yourself out of it. You know, that guy's super nice to me, but he doesn't know me that well. I mean, you're always talking yourself out of the joy that comes in life. And so to have a program like 12-Step Recovery, where you learn how to offload that shame and the fear that comes with it and mm-hmm. the guilt, it results in a joy that most people don't ever have. And so that's what we do.
That's huge. I've never heard anyone talk about the triumvirate of fear, guilt, and shame before. John, is that something that you've adopted at Tallgrass? Is that a 12-step
that's a relatively common theme in 12-step recovery.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was just curious. Interesting. Wow. I did a really interesting, I did a guided meditation a few years ago, and it was just some random thing I found online. And it was sent to me. It was just, but it's something that you can just find online. I'm not going to put the name because of the person that did it. And because you might chuckle. But what was very interesting about it was he was talking about being grateful for what God gave you, being grateful. He had you put your hand on your heart and be grateful that you had a heart and that you could feel joy, like you said, and feel gratitude. And he said what you couldn't do at the same time as being grateful was be fearful. You can't, they oppose, you know what I mean? And it was very, very interesting when you just said that, it made me think of that. But because you can't do both. You can't experience the joy that you're talking about and be fearful, feel guilt, and feel shame all at the same time. I thought that was really beautiful. That's cool.
No, we talk a lot about the fact that fear and faith are opposites. And I don't mean faith, religious faith, but a spiritual faith, certainly. You cannot be filled with faith and be filled with fear at the same time.
John, do you think that, I mean, this is kind of an interesting rabbit hole we're kind of diving down to, because obviously you're in a substance and alcohol recovery. That's what you do. But do you think that that's a symptom of the shame, guilt, and fear? Or that maybe, or is that a cause? Which one, I mean, which is it? Is it the chicken or the egg in that? Is it a combination of both?
Yes. Yes. So the fear, guilt, and shame create a spiritual gap. And then we go out looking for a solution. And when you have that spiritual gap, you know, so everyone's using their solution. Humans are very, very solution oriented. Mm-hmm. We want a thing that's going to work. Mm-hmm. And so when you have that spiritual gap, you fill it. I filled it with drugs and alcohol. Our guests fill that spiritual gap with drugs and alcohol, and then they feel worse. So the fear, guilt, and shame bring us to the point of a spiritual gap that we're going to fill with substances. And then the substances amplify that fear, guilt, and shame. And, you know, that's why rock bottom is worse than the day before you started, because it just takes you down. So the answer is yes. We reach for it because we have a gap, a spiritual gap.
So it's the same thing. So everything, you know, whether it's overeating, it's abuse, you know, self-inflicted abuse of some kind, all those things, it really falls into the same thing.
Well, I think so. You know, I my staff jokes that there's nothing that I'm not addicted to. I mean, I have to regulate. I don't have an M&M or I'll have all the M&Ms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I told you when I'm there. I just stopped.
Oh, you're human. Oh, yeah. So you mean you're human.
So you have the binge gene.
Oh, absolutely. I told you right when I was there, I just stopped drinking coffee because I was drinking about 35 cups a day because there was coffee. You know, one of the things I learned early, the only thing I learned early in recovery was I just can't start, which was not a solution, because then I had the spiritual gap and nothing to fill it. And those were an ugly several months where I had all of the anxiety, all the fear, guilt, shame, rage, etc., and no anesthetic and no solution, because I'd given up on drinking and using. So then what? And it wasn't for about 4 months. It was 125 days later that I went to my first 12-step meeting. I didn't want to go, but I was so crushingly unhappy. How could it, you know, it couldn't be worse. And that was where the notion of the spiritual gap and the need to believe in something greater than myself became so apparent. And so, you know, so I have all sorts of things that I could do wrong with myself if I go on my own guidance instead of reaching higher. But I sponsor a guy who's in Overeaters Anonymous. He doesn't drink to excess. He's never done drugs in his life. He was a band geek in college. Wow. And going through the steps with him and the angst and the guilt and the shame and everything that Bill feels is exactly the same as another guy I sponsored who injected anything. In fact, for a while, we pondered whether or not he was an addict of the drugs or just the needle. I mean, he would crush and inject anything. And their stories are the same. The process is the same. The way that they had to work through identifying a spiritual gap and then identifying the fear, guilt, and shame that was, you know, crushing them is the same.
Well, I think that really brings that home, because I've got all those personality traits, whatever you want to call it. Not the drinking and drugs. I never went there, but you know, I've never found there's never been a bag of potato chips that I couldn't just eat all of them if I wasn't really careful, or a bag of M&Ms and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I know that, you know, that's a really powerful thing that you're bringing out. So tell us, John, I'm going to change gears a little bit. How did you come to be in the nonprofit space? I mean, you know, we got to visit and spend some time together, and obviously you didn't start in nonprofit. You started in the for-profit world, right?
I did. I was a financial advisor, had a wealth management company, And I was a joiner. I was on a lot of boards, Performing Arts Center board, Symphony board. I was on a board for USA Swimming, all kinds of boards.
Cool. Yeah.
And then I was a volunteer at a lot of places. I started volunteering at Tallgrass in June of 2008. And they asked me to be on the board, and I said, not right now. And then a couple of years later, they asked me on the board, and I put them off. And then in June of 2017, so 9 years later, they asked me to be on the board, and I said, yes, now's the time. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. And I went on the board, and we had a big strategic planning session. And let me back up a step. When they asked me to be on the board, I said, you shouldn't do that because I'm disruptive. And I mean, unless you're looking to make changes, unless you want a real honest look at how things are going, don't ask me to be on your board. If you're satisfied with how it is, don't invite me.
Wow.
And they're like, oh, we're 100% comfortable with that, John. Don't worry about a thing. We've got it nailed down. That's why we feel like we can actually be on the board now and move forward. And so I come on the board, and we have a strategic planning session that went really poorly for me. And, you know, one of the things I will not help people fail. That was one of our things we repeated all the time in the financial business. Don't help someone fail. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on this board, and I resigned. I wrote a letter resigning from the board because with their level of engagement and the leadership they had in place at Tallgrass, I didn't see a way that it would work. And, you know, about a third of the board thought, who's that guy think he is? You know, shuffle him off. But two thirds of the board thought, all right, call his bluff. He thinks he's so smart, tell him to do it. And so they came to me and they said, well, you know, would you like to take over as executive director? And I said, well, I've seen your books and I can't afford you and you can't afford me. So it's very kind of you. I'm just going to go back to doing the second Wednesday of the month group that I've done for, you know, 9 years, and good luck. I'm just going to do second Wednesday of the month group that I still do. And so over the weekend and then starting the next week, I was thinking about it and praying about it and thinking about it. And then a guy walked into my business and bought it. I didn't know him. Wow. I'd never heard of him. He showed up and bought my book in the financial business. You have a book of business. He bought my book. I called my wife. I said, hey, I'm unemployed. And she said, the feds? I said, no.
She said, get in the basement.
She goes, I knew there was a scam somewhere. Yeah.
And I said, no. And I'm going to call Tallgrass back, I think. And so I called Tallgrass back. Wow. And so then I started on November 1st of 17. Wow. I'd never been in nonprofit leadership, unless you count the years in business where it was a struggle. Even though I had the offer, then there was the formality of the interview process. And about 40 minutes before my interview, one of my board members, whom I've known pretty much my whole life, calls me and says, hey, just throw together a business plan, would you, quick? I said, Bill, the meeting's in 40 minutes. He said, we'll take bullet points. That's fine. So 40 minutes later, I showed up with bullet points on a business plan. I called it the first 100 days of a new administration because, you know, the change of presidency had just happened and it seemed to be in the air. And I just said, my first 100 days, I want to thank and recognize the people who started this, the people who made it happen, and the people who keep it happening right now. And that's all we're going to do.
Wow. How novel.
I'm going to say thank you to the board members. I'm going to sit down with each one of them and find out why they're here and what they want to do. I'm going to sit down with all of our major donors and see if they'll stay involved with us. And I'm going to sit down with the staff who has been doing a spectacular job and just getting pounded down day after day after day by the leadership that I'm replacing. Because where the whole thing fell apart was it was a 2-day strategic planning session. The first day was the board. The second day was the staff. And so at the end of the first day with the board, where it was a lot of fun. You know, we're talking about all these things we can do because we're doing so well. And we got to the end of that, and I said, who is going to thank and recognize the staff in the morning so that they can go through a strategic planning session without fear, without thinking that we just spent today complaining about them? The former executive director said, well, I would never thank them.
Wow.
And I said, pardon me? Well, I can never thank them.
Yeah.
Because then they're going to do what they want. And I said, okay, well, I'll do it then. And so I went and thanked them for the first 5 minutes of the meeting in the morning, because they put us in a position where the board could spend the day dreamcasting, essentially. And it was that it was that unwillingness to thank them that made my decision to resign from the board. So then when I started, I thought thank yous were the most important thing. And frankly,
God bless you.
Thank yous go a long way. When you show up and appreciate people, you know, and just, we just have the habit now at work. When someone comes to work, everybody says, thank you. And you leave at the end of your shift, you thank the people who, you know, who came in to take your spot. You know, we thank the cook, we thank everybody, because it's just way better that way. And that was the business plan I brought was, I'm going to overthank as many people as I can. And then we're going to see what's next. Now, it didn't work out perfectly. The board got thanked and they looked at how it was going and they just all took a big, deep breath and relaxed. And that meeting, instead of our four quarterly board meetings, we had two. And it was fun. It was a lot of rah-rah and clapping, but not a lot of momentum. And then the next year, the board chair who hired me resigned from the board. And there essentially wasn't a board meeting that year. So I'm 2 years in and I had not taken the initiative, because the board meeting is supposed to be called by the board chair. I had not taken the initiative to push that. So, you know, I'm starting at the start of year three, I'm getting uncomfortable. Aside from the fact that, you know, we have money in the bank and people keep showing up and the employees seem happy. I haven't had an evaluation. We haven't even set real goals for the executive director. And so I started asking for an evaluation, which caused the board to have board meetings. So then my third board chair in 3 years started the week that COVID swept across the country. And she is spectacular. She mastered the fact that we're going to have a real agenda and set real expectations for what both how the meeting goes and the people who attend the meeting. We're not going to do committee work during a board meeting. Board meetings are legislative. So we have real committees, and the committees will have real reports, and the work will get done, or at least the proposal will be ready at a board meeting, so that we're not spending our time in doing committee work when we're meeting as a board. And so we're on year three.
I like setting those expectations. So.
Yeah, we're on year three together now. And, you know, I've had a couple reviews now. I like that. And in the reviews, the board has been very, very gracious and a little too hard on themselves. They're like, wow, we're really not helping you much. Well, we're not finished.
That's an interesting take.
There's still lots of opportunities. Now the board is moving forward. We're actually doing a strategic planning session in August. So the pre-work for that starts in June. We'll have a series of questionnaires and things for the board so that we can structure an effective 6 to 8 hour strategic planning session in August. And so the board has come a long way.
John, do you,
and when they weren't good, it was because I wasn't asking them to be good.
Okay. That was where I was going to.
Everybody mentioned this in Texas.
You know, you said that. You said, we didn't have a board, didn't have anything. They weren't doing anything. But the reason was because I didn't ask them anything. And I think I see that, you know, we hear about this a lot from other folk, you know, especially executive directors who are like, well, my board this and board that. And it appears to me
that
there's an imbalance, or a lack of understanding of what the roles are. What are the roles of the executive director? What are the roles of the board? And I'm not talking about in the operation of the nonprofit. I'm talking about within the board, the context of the board,
the dynamics.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, clearly, my board, their job is to support the executive director. And to make certain the executive director is making sure that all of our resources are pointed toward supporting the mission of the organization. They are not invited into the organization operationally at all.
We could say that 10 times.
And that's their job. And they know that. And part of the reason they know that is because I'm not very manageable. At our first board meeting, I said,
which is why we think you're a good leader.
Well, I have a guy, you know, I have the great privilege of working in a 12-step organization, and 12-step works for managing lots of things, including organizations. And so I just said, I'm going to manage this like 12-step. So what does that mean? That means we're going to recognize that this work is more important than we are. You know, the work is our higher power. Mm-hmm. If you don't have one, if for people who need one, that one works. So the work is more important than we are. And we're going to look to the work to guide what we're going to do. We're going to turn our will and our lives over to that for a decision-making process. Mm-hmm. And then step four, you know, we're going to explore what have we done right and wrong? And what things do we do? Because in organizations, we do things with no idea why we do them other than that's how we've done them. You know, and you always get the person who says, well, we need to keep Billy Bob around for institutional memory, institutional history. Well, only if Billy Bob is willing to examine that history. Because otherwise, we're just making the same mistakes over and over again.
Yeah.
So
and improve. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we share with each other what's been working and what hasn't been working. That's essentially step five. Step six and seven are become willing to make changes and then ask God for guidance in making those changes. And that's what we do as a management team. And step eight is to be willing to make amends to people, you know, if necessary. And you know, we're willing to do that. Step nine is to actually go. Step eight is to be willing. Step nine is to actually go and make the amends. Step 10 is to keep monitoring yourself and when wrong, promptly admit it. Step 11 is to grow spiritually. And step 12 is to bring this message of hope to the alcoholic who still suffers. Well, how is that not the perfect way to run our organization? So I had when you get a guidebook, use it. I'm not there reinventing the wheel. I'm there trying desperately to take my own ego out of it enough to do what's right in front of me. And that makes me unmanageable because we already have a way to do it.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you love our podcast, click the download button, rate us, and follow us on social media at HGA Fundraising. Get out there, start fundraising, and raise more money. See you next time.